fans, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is Dan Friedel in for VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. It's the 8th day of August, 2018. That means it's the 10-year anniversary of perhaps the most spectacular Olympic Games opening ceremony ever. In 2008, almost 11,000 athletes from over 200 countries marched in the famed Bird's Nest Stadium after a series of eye-popping performances by Chinese dancers, drummers, and acrobats. I remember sitting in the sweltering stadium wondering how it was possible that the Chinese and Olympic flags seemed to be blowing in a stiff wind. It was then we realized that the flagpoles had built-in fans. If you remember those Beijing games, you remember Michael Phelps and Usain Bolt winning medals, and China coming atop the gold medal count with 48, and the U.S. coming in second with 36. Kenya was the top finisher among African nations with 6 gold medals and 16 overall. Gold medals for Kenya in its best Olympics ever came in the women's and men's 800 meters, women's and men's 1500 meters, the men's steeplechase, and the men's marathon. While you remember that golden summer for Kenya, let's move on to some more somber news that broke early Wednesday. Nicholas Bett, the 2015 world champion in the 400-meter hurdles, died in a car crash just after his return to Kenya from last week's National Championship Athletics meet in Nigeria. Bett was only 28. In 2015, he became the first ever Kenyan to win a world title in an event shorter than 800 meters. Kenya's delegation won the overall title last week in Asaba. Bett's sports utility vehicle crashed off the road between Eldoret and Kapsabet in Kenya's famed Rift Valley, the western region known to provide good high-altitude training. Leading into the 2016 Olympics, just 1 year after winning the world title, Bett was asked about what it would mean to add an Olympic championship to his list of honors.
It will be good for me because to be Olympic champion and to be world champion, it's yes, now my name it will be bigger because I've become champion twice. So it will be good for me, and I will be happy. Yeah, and I will dedicate to my family, my children, and everybody at home.
That's Kenyan hurdler Nicholas Bett speaking ahead of the 2016 Olympic Games. Bett did not make it to the Olympic finals in 2016, hitting a hurdle during the heats and failing to make it to the semifinals. His 2015 time of 47.79 seconds is a Kenyan record. On its website, the IAAF said it was deeply saddened and shocked by the news of Bett's death in its obituary. VOA intern Prince Nesta worked hard to get a member of the Kenyan athletics team on the phone today. He spoke with 2015 javelin world champion Julius Yego. Yego was Bett's teammate, and they were together over the last week in Nigeria.
So right now on the line, I'm speaking to Kenyan World 2015 Javelin Champion Julius Yego, also known as Mr. YouTube Man, who's also fresh from winning a gold medal for Kenya in the African Championships. Congratulations, my brother, and welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. How are you doing, Yego?
Thank you. I'm doing fine, but so sad.
How would you describe Nicholas?
He was an humble boy. You know, I know Nicholas. He's younger than me. He was 28 years old. I'm 30 years, so I'm older than him. He was a very humble boy. I remember in Beijing, we shared the same room before he won the World Championships in Beijing. And again, of course, in Birmingham, you know, Commonwealth Games, when I won the gold medal, and he didn't make it the finals of the Commonwealth Games. He was a close friend of mine. It's sad, you know. It's so sad.
But what
I can say, he was an humble boy, a man of few words.
I'm so sorry about that. It's a big loss for Kenya, since he was the first Kenyan to win a world gold in a distance shorter than 800 meters. How will his death affect the team spirit moving forward?
You know, adversely, of course. You know, we were engaged together last one day ago. You know, we were in the same plane to Nairobi from Nigeria after the African Championships, where unfortunately he got injured. He didn't finish the race. I shared the same room with his elder brother, Harold, who happens to be doing 400 hurdles as well.
Mm.
It's so unfortunate, you know. I can't believe, you know, Nicholas is no longer with us.
You mentioned that he also just took part in the African Championships and you guys were in the same plane back from Nigeria. How was he like? How was his mood? How was his spirit like?
It happens, you know. It happens sometimes. You see things and we assume, you know. But me, I think, you know, I always speak my heart. And when we were in Nigeria, you know, I look at him as a friend. He wasn't that happy, you know. He wasn't that happy as he was before. And as his brother, he was my, you know, roommate. I asked his brother, Aaron, and I asked him, Nicholas doesn't look happy. He looked like he is a disturbed human being. And, you know, just let him rest in peace. It's so sad. But I remember I asked his brother, Nicholas wasn't looking happy when we were in Nigeria.
Yeah. Any clues so far? What are the police saying?
You know, it's just an accident. And I think, the communication I got from a friend who happened to be my, you know, we stay in the same, you know, we live in the same county, Wasingishu County. That is just a... For me, I live less than 20 minutes from town, in Eldoret town, and he was living, I think, like 30 minutes from town. So I speak to one of my friends when he told me that he went to the scene. He saw everything, and, you know, he told me that one of the front tires of the vehicle he was driving in, I think it just lost control. I think the tire came out, and I think he was trying to make control of the car. He lost his life. You know.
Yeah, he was your close friend.
Let him, please.
I'm so sorry about that, Julius. I'm very sorry. Take it easy, my friend. Take it easy.
Yeah.
Any good memories you guys shared together during your best times
together?
He was
a humble boy. His pocket.
I'm so sorry, my brother.
Thank you.
I'm so sorry.
Thank you.
My condolences to you, Nicholas family, and the whole athletics family.
He was a young boy. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Prince, for contributing that conversation with Julius Yago. I'm Dan Friedel, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. I'm filling in for Sonny this week as he enjoys some well-deserved rest and relaxation after covering the Basketball Without Borders camp and the 2018 NBA Africa game last week in South Africa. Moving on to other African sports news, yesterday we mentioned the naming of former Nigerian international Emmanuel Amunike as the new head coach of the Tanzanian national soccer team. We have some not-so-great news to report today coming out of the western part of the continent. On Tuesday, the National Sports Council of the Gambia announced the suspensions of three members of the Football Federation, including the president, Lamine Kaba Bajo, due to allegations of tax fraud. Abduli Jallo, the first vice president, will now take over the operations of the Football Federation. Late in 2017, FIFA threatened to suspend the country from international competition due to troubles between the GFF and the National Sports Council. Let's transition now to the first of a two-part conversation about some American sports attractions. You may have heard me and Sonny talking about on the show over the last 3 years, but perhaps you don't know too much about them beyond hearing their names. I'm Dan Friedel, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. I'm in for Sonny Young this week, and thinking about summer vacations, here we are in early August. I'm joined right now by freelance sports writer Elliot Smith, who's here to talk with us about some of the iconic sports destinations in North America. If you're planning a trip to the U.S. or Canada, here are some places to keep an eye out for if you're a sports fan. Elliot, the first sport we're going to look at is the one that's coming down to the end of the regular season over the next 6 weeks. That's Major League Baseball. We don't talk a ton about Major League Baseball on this show outside of the playoffs, but two of the stadiums that people definitely need to check out, one of them is in Chicago, one of them is Boston. What can you tell our listeners about these two iconic stadiums in Major League Baseball?
Well, I think when you look at Wrigley Field in Chicago and Fenway Park in Boston, you're looking at the history of the game. Those are two of the three oldest stadiums in Major League Baseball. The third oldest stadium is actually Dodger Stadium in Los Angeles. But they kind of mix that old school vibe of baseball with sort of a fun party atmosphere. And I think you really get that combination of this is why people enjoy baseball when you go to these stadiums. Just talk about Chicago for a little bit. You know, for years, the Cubs were a bad team, a terrible team, but they always had great crowds. And it's simply because the stadium is so unique. You know, it has the ivy-covered outfield walls. It has the bleachers, which are always filled with people. The Cubs used to exclusively play home games during the day. And so it was still always filled despite, you know, people having to work and stuff like that. And the area around the stadium, Wrigleyville, is filled with all kinds of classic American-style bars and taverns and things like that. So over the years, as the Cubs have gotten better, you know, it's even become more of a destination for baseball fans, for tourists, for people just wanting to get an experience of sitting out in the bleachers and watching a game. And in the background, in the surrounding apartments, they have built little miniature bleacher setups where people can actually sit on a roof of an apartment and look into the stadium and watch the game. So a lot of times people aren't even inside the stadium and they're watching the game. There's a similar setup with Fenway Park. It's a classic park built directly into the neighborhood. And as you go in, you know, there's all kinds of bars and food and people milling about the street, and it just kind of creates a fun atmosphere. Fenway's unique, you know, it was built so long ago, the seats are very small and they're kind of at a funny angle. So, you know, it wouldn't be the most luxurious place to see a ball game, but the sense of history is so there that it makes it worth a trip.
Well, for Wrigley Field in particular, it's pretty interesting to see the fans watching the games from the rooftops nearby. It just goes to show how in the old days, the stadiums were really part of the community. You know, the community grew up around the stadium, or potentially vice versa, where it filled in, compared to a lot of the stadiums that were built later on in North American sports history that saw the, you know, a giant swath of land set aside for a stadium where you could play baseball during the summer and you could play football in the winter. And then it was just surrounded by parking lots. There's something really nice about being at a baseball game where it feels like you're in a neighborhood.
Yeah, and that's what makes, you know, Wrigley and Fenway so cool, is that they're part of the neighborhood. They, you know, the history is there. And yeah, like you said, in the early days of baseball, and, you know, in the 30s, 40s, 50s, stadiums were within neighborhoods and they were, you know, houses and things around them. And yeah, we saw the era of multi-purpose stadiums where teams moved to the suburbs or where they could get land. And now, interesting, you're starting to see some of that come back towards the city. You think about a place like Pittsburgh's PNC Park, which is right downtown. If you sit there, it has some of the greatest views, I think, in baseball. And there are a couple of other places like that. San Diego's Petco Park is right downtown. Seattle's Safeco Field is in a great area. So you're starting to see, you know, some of the new stadiums are built with more of that, capturing some of the neighborhood, capturing the city. But I think, you know, for visitors who are coming here, Wrigley and Fenway represent that ideal the best because you get a sense of the history as well.
We're joined by Elliot Smith. He's a freelance sports writer, and we're talking about some of the iconic sports locations to see a game in North America. I'm Dan Friedel, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Elliot, one of the sports that is getting started pretty soon here in the next couple of weeks is college football. Certainly, there are a lot of college athletes in the U.S. who have connections to Africa, whether their parents were born there or they were born there themselves. And if you look at a lot of college football rosters these days, you can see African last names. So perhaps a listener in our audience is heading for Pasadena, California to see a game at the Rose Bowl. What can you tell us about the Rose Bowl?
Well, the Rose Bowl is one of the most iconic college football venues. And then actually LA has two really iconic historic venues, the Rose Bowl and the LA Memorial Coliseum, which has hosted several Olympics and things like that. And they host the USC Trojans, but the Rose Bowl is home to the UCLA Bruins, and it's a really unique stadium. It's low and flat, and the seats kind of go up, and it's set in the mountain area, and it just, you know, when you're there and it's a sunny day, it just really feels like something special. And, you know, they've had all sorts of sporting events there, but it is a college football mecca, and it's definitely one of the places where you just get that feeling of, you know, there's 100,000 people there, you're part of something big, and everybody's there to enjoy football, which is, you know, in many ways now truly the American sport.
That's sports journalist Elliot Smith talking with us about some of the iconic sports venues you can visit if you ever make it to North America. We'll have more of our conversation with Elliot later in the week. I'm Dan Friedel in for Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Keeping it in North America, let's turn now to the world of golf. As you may know, professional golfers from all over the world are in the St. Louis, Missouri area for the PGA Championship Tournament, which begins Thursday at Belrive Country Club. My VOA colleague Gwen Uten has a preview of the fourth jewel of the 2018 Grand Slam in golf, during which Tiger Woods speaks about returning to Belrive for the first time in 17 years. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Dan. At a Tuesday news conference, Tiger spoke about how it feels to come back to Belrive for the first time since the September 11th attacks in 2001.
I hadn't played, you know, I literally haven't stepped foot on this golf course since that week in 2001. Didn't get up here, you know, pre-British Open, and yesterday I took the day off, so today, we only got in five holes and didn't really get a chance to see a whole lot, but I only remember a couple of the holes, but I didn't really remember the first five that I played today. And so I'll have to do some more homework tomorrow and get a good feel for what's going on for the rest of the week.
In 2001, the PGA Tour canceled the American Express World Golf Championship at Belrive out of respect for the families and victims of the 9/11 attacks. On Tuesday, Tiger talked about that last visit and the aftermath of the tragedy.
One of the towers had fallen on the American Express building, and a lot of people lost their lives. And you know, the people at American Express were struggling at the time, and I think Tim made the right move in canceling the event. And that was on the 11th, and I drove home on the 13th, and 17 hours to get back home to Florida, and it was a very surreal time for myself on that drive, and a lot of reflecting.
In 2008, Belle Reeve hosted the BMW Championship, but Tiger missed the event due to knee injuries. But now he's back after finishing in a tie for sixth in an impressive run at the Open 3 weeks ago. He hopes to snag a record-equaling fifth PGA Championship and his first major since 2008. Meanwhile, American Jordan Spieth heads to Belle Reeve, one major win away from completing a career Grand Slam. This time last year, all eyes were on Spieth going into the Quail Hollow Golf Tournament, fresh off his third major title at the British Open. However, Spieth finished at Quail Hollow in a disappointing tie for 28th place, and this season he has yet to win. But on Tuesday, Spieth said this year he's more relaxed and happy to fly under the radar.
I think I was probably a little more anxious last year. I think going in, there was a big focus on it, given it was right after the Open Championship, after winning the Open Championship. So it was, you know, fresh. I was, you know, in form and going to a place that, you know, if I worked up the leaderboard, it would create a lot of noise. And I feel somewhat under the radar this year. I've kind of felt that way a lot this year. I don't mind it, but at the same time, this tournament will always be circled and until I'm able to hopefully win it someday.
Spieth hopes to add the PGA title to his victories at the Open, Masters, and U.S. Open to join the elite list of greats who have won all four majors. The 100th PGA Championships tee off on Thursday in St. Louis. And that is all from me for now. Back to you, Dan.
Thanks, Gwen. We'll look forward to following Tiger and Jordan through the weekend near St. Louis. Quickly now, we're joined by Prince Nesta in studio. He has some more reaction to the news of Nicholas Bett's death. What are they saying?
Yeah, so Kenyan president just tweeted, deeply saddened by the death of former 400-meter hurdles world champion Nicholas Bett, who died today in a tragic road accident. Bett earned the country great honors in his outstanding victories. My deepest sympathies and heartfelt condolences to his family, relatives, and friends. Kenya's deputy president also tweeted and said, the passing on of world champion Nicholas Bett is a tragic and a big loss to his family, friends, Kenya, and the global athletics fraternity. He made history in 2015 by being the first Kenyan gold medalist over a short distance in Beijing, China. Also, some reactions from four-time world long-distance runner and athletics champion Lona Kiplagat, who said, we're deeply saddened and shocked to hear the death of Kenya's 2015 world 400-meters hurdles champion Nicholas Bett. May his soul rest in peace. Condolences to his family, friends, and to all Kenyan athletics family.
Prince, as a Kenyan yourself, this tragic story of a young athlete who was not so long ago at the top of the mountain in world athletics. How does it feel to you to see somebody like this face an untimely demise?
It's a very sad situation. I mean, Bett, as a Kenyan, we've lost a national hero. Bett was a trailblazer, especially in the 400 meters hurdles, which Kenya had never won. And it was kind of an inspiration to young athletes, you know. And this particular death actually rekindles the memories of another gold and Olympic medalist, Samuel Wanjiru, who died at the peak of his career when he was only 24 years. And it's a tragedy. It's a tragedy. May his soul rest in peace.
I'm sorry for you and all of your Kenyan countrymen to hear the news today. It's a tough situation. It's a tough story. And the world has outpoured its sympathy today, I think.
Sure.
That wraps up the August 8th edition of The Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to VOA producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Suleiman Terawali. And thank you for tuning in. I'm Dan Friedel, and for VOA's Sunny Young in Washington, And that's the sunny side of sports.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Terrorists like to travel. Terrorist groups like ISIS and Al-Qaeda depend on travel, said Ambassador-at-Large and Coordinator for Counterterrorism Nathan Sales to Transatlantic Alliance partners at a recent conference hosted by the German Marshall Fund. They have to travel to receive training. They have to travel to case their targets. They have to travel to carry out their attacks. Every time they board a plane or cross a border, we have an opportunity to detect and capture them. When ISIS attempted to create a physical caliphate, an unprecedented number of foreign terrorist fighters, roughly 40,000 people, flocked to the war zone in Syria and Iraq. And now that we've liberated some 98% of the territory ISIS once held, there's a risk that some of these battle-hardened veterans will return home or relocate to third countries. To identify terrorists or suspicious persons hiding among international travelers, the United States uses PNR, or passenger name records, to search out those who may pose a threat and should be prioritized for additional screening. PNR is information provided by passengers and collected by air carriers for enabling reservations and carrying out the check-in process. In December 2017, the UN Security Council unanimously adopted Resolution 2396, which, among other things, obliges all UN member states to develop the capability to collect, process, and analyze PNR to limit terrorist travel. The United States applauds the passage of Resolution 2396 and is prepared to help other countries implement their obligations to develop PNR systems. So we will continue to push for fast and full implementation of Resolution 2396 and to highlight the value of PNR. We will also share our PNR system with any country that wants it. And we will work with the International Civil Aviation Organization to establish appropriate standards and recommended practices for PNR. The United States and the nations of Europe are strategic partners on virtually every major issue of the day. Indeed, more than partners, allies, and friends. Nowhere is this transatlantic synergy more apparent than in our joint struggle against global terrorism, said Ambassador Sales. We share the same values, we share the same interests, and we share the same enemies. In short, we're in this together. There's a lot of work ahead of us in the fight against terrorism. Only by facing it together can we win.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, Jean-Pierre Bemba, the former Democratic Republic of Congo vice president, is planning to run for president in the December election. Bemba's ICC war crimes conviction was recently overturned on appeal. Politics in the DRC on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
What's up, Africa? I'm Jackson Bungani in Washington.
And I'm Nadia Sami. Thanks for joining us. We'd love to have you on board. This is Upfront on The Voice of America.
Listen, we need to discuss what's going on in your communities, issues that affect you.
Are you involved?
Are you engaged in transforming your society?
Today, right now. This is your platform.
Let us know what you've been up to.
Check us out on Facebook. Drop us a line.
It's Upfront Wednesdays at 1730 UTC
right here on VOA Africa.
The Voice of America, VOA.